and welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Candace LePage.
I don't know if you've ever dated a guy who wasn't what he looked like or what you thought he was, Candace, but I can probably wager he was not an international assassin of some sort.
Not so far, at least as far as I know.
That's it. Keep the hopes high. Yeah. You never know. We're going to talk about more of that in a minute, but for now, End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans, and we are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the new action buddy comedy, The Spy Who Dumped Me. That is in the back half of the show. For the first half, we're going to talk about some recent news items from the past week, including Winnie the Pooh. If you saw Christopher Robin last weekend, then you probably don't live in China. Why is Pooh censored in China? We'll talk about the interesting reason that is. And then, who is America about? Halfway through his run, but Sacha Baron Cohen, is he helping modern politics or hurting it? And then finally, we'll talk about what films you might be interested in watching if you're going to the Toronto International Film Festival in September. But first, we catch up with the matter concerning James Gunn. And Candace, you weren't here when that broke. I think Peter was here that week, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I know it wasn't me, which is good because I feel like I'm constantly here for controversy.
Well, you speak well on controversial subjects, and I can't help it if fate gives us controversy when you come in. But so for people who may not recall or remember, James Gunn was fired as the director of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 after a alt-right website dug up previous tweets he made between 10 and 6 years ago, which were all in bad taste and concerned, mm-hmm. among other things, pedophilia and rape. But, I mean, it's a controversy that won't go away. And this week we had the entire cast of Guardians of the Galaxy sign a joint statement asking Disney to rehire James Gunn. So far, at least as of our recording of this, no official response from Disney, but I think it's fair to say that he's probably not getting his job back.
Yes. So, and I think the reason for that is because Disney is a for-profit company. Yep. So what I think is, you know, in any normal workplace, what should be the correct response to this type of thing is putting someone on suspension, asking them to do some work to understand what they did wrong, how not to do it, etc. I do think James Gunn has actually already done that stuff, but that's beside the point. And the reality is that Disney isn't willing to put a giant moneymaker on the shelf until James Gunn takes some actions that a normal workplace would demand of a person who... Yeah, because this isn't really a fireable offense.
No.
It's certainly, you know, it's concerning, obviously, and you want to address it. But, yeah. I mean, they need Guardians of the Galaxy to come out at the right time.
Yes.
And that means not holding enough time for James Gunn to go through any sort of whatever.
Yeah, you're right, and I think despite the the letter, I was reading a thing in the Guardian that said, you know, even though you had people like Chris Pratt and Zoe Saldana, Bradley Cooper and Vin Diesel, people who are like big stars who bring a lot of heft and stake with them, they're probably not going to walk away from Guardians of the Galaxy if James Gunn isn't brought back because they're under contract. Plus, you know, they want to be in good standing with Disney because that Fox merger was just approved and Disney now owns 40% of all the movies.
They own everything.
Right. It's, so, you know, if you thumb your nose up at Disney, it's going to be maybe not hard to find work, but harder to find work if you are, you know, even a big star like Chris Pratt or Vin Diesel even. I think... I think what strikes a lot of people, because James Gunn has a lot of support, mm-hmm. is that, well, first of all, he, as you said, he was more contrite than even somebody like Harvey Weinstein, who has well, actual rape allegations against him. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he James Gunn didn't, like, how dare you dig up my old tweets? You know, he gave a thoughtful explanation and, even more important, a thoughtful apology several times.
Yes.
And then the other part is that I think that unlike the Roseanne situation where, you know, when she was ultimately fired, mm-hmm. there was more than enough indication from previous statements and social media posts that this was going to end in her being fired.
Well, and not only that, it was now. Mm-hmm. She's saying those things now. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, there are, right now, the rate of our social code is moving very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. And even things that were okay last year are not okay this year. And that's not mm-hmm. to say that they should have been okay last year either, but they were, for whatever reason. Society was like, oh yeah, that's what comedy looks like.
Right.
So to apply today's social, and I mean, I feel like an English teacher right now, but to apply today's social mores to something from 8 or 10 years ago mm-hmm. is really difficult, mm-hmm. especially when that person actually looks at it and goes, oh, those things I was saying 8 or 10 years ago were not really okay 8 or 10 years ago, but are especially not okay now. And here's all the reasons why. Shows that that person has actually changed and learned. Mm-hmm. And as, you know, because I'm here every week for controversy, I do believe in giving people the opportunity to change and learn. I mean, even Harvey Weinstein, who has very serious allegations against him mm-hmm. and criminal allegations, but we live in a world where we believe that if someone pays, you know, pays the price for their crime, mm-hmm. does the time, as they say, hopefully they come out of it a changed person. They have paid they've taken the punishment and they've done the work to not do that again.
Right. There's my point was that there's been a progression since then, and James Gunn mm-hmm. has, you know, perhaps 10 years ago when he was more of an indie filmmaker, he was coming out of Trauma, which is not exactly a boutique. You know, you don't see Lloyd Kaufman in the front row at the Oscars. It doesn't excuse it.
He felt like people weren't paying attention to him.
Exactly. To have come from there to being the man who not only shepherded two of the biggest hits in the Marvel bracket, but also, you know, he was supposedly having some sort of figurehead role in terms of guiding a sub-series in the Marvel movies about the cosmic, more cosmic mm-hmm. space-based characters. So there was obviously trust. And again, what differentiates him from Roseanne is that it showed that he left that stuff behind. Mm-hmm. And was now acting like a leader and someone who was in the position he was in, unlike Roseanne, who, you know, a couple of years ago was posting videos of herself in a Nazi uniform putting human-shaped cookies in an oven, because that's cool. But I think at the end of the day, because the corporate entity that is Disney, and I think it's almost like a three-strikes rule for Disney, mm-hmm. too, because there was John Lasseter.
Yeah.
Who's now quietly back at work. And I mean, that kind of speaks to some of the restorative justice things we were talking mm-hmm. about. They had Roseanne, which kind of was there the whole time, mm-hmm. and then it went too far. And then James Gunn, it seemed like it fell on him the hardest, even though his controversy was the smallest.
Yes.
But I mean, unfortunately, that's... that's the way these things go sometimes, and it's sad because he's, you know, a very I think he's a very creative guy and has a lot of talent, and you know, he took characters nobody cared about mm-hmm. and made them you know, staples in the Marvel roster, but unfortunately The other unfortunate part of it is that this was kind of like the kooky alt-right people who were just looking for payback for Roseanne by trying to dirty up someone else, which, you know, adds another level of griminess to this. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Disney, as you said, is a money-making venture. And, they can't – they have to act swiftly and stand behind their decision. And unfortunately, there's not much the actual Guardians of the Galaxy can do.
No, and I do believe that James Gunn will continue to have a strong career after this.
Yeah.
Like,
somebody's going to hire him, and it's going to be a PR coup because he's coming off two successful films, and he's coming off the controversy. So it'll be a comeback story. It'll be a redemption story, and it's going to be a big success for everyone because everyone loves a comeback. So
it's true.
Winnie the Pooh, whether he'll come back to China is anyone's question. Because this weekend we have a new movie called Christopher Robin opening in theaters, and it's about a grown-up Christopher Robin who remembers all his imaginary friends are actually real and finds them again. But apparently it will not be seen in China because dissidents in China who don't like the regime of Xi Jinping use Winnie the Pooh as a cartoon sort of mocking Xi Jinping because apparently there's some kind of resemblance. I don't see it.
I don't see it either. Is it maybe in the way he talks? I don't know.
That's an interesting question. Maybe I can't think of what his voice is.
Yeah.
Because even when he's, you know, in America or Canada, you know, when you see him at a press conference, you always hear the translator voice. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily hear his voice. You don't hear whether it's like, yes, I am pleased to come to Canada. Or however Pooh sounds, I don't know.
I have terrible impressions.
But, you know, I wonder if you know, like, Xi Jinping sounds like Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, I mean, we all know there are many of us who have Eeyores in our lives. And it's not because the person resembles a donkey. It's because the person, you know, has a similar...
They're pragmatic to the point of being nihilistic.
Yes. So who knows? I agree. I don't see any sort of resemblance, but it could be based on a variety of things, not just on the face of a teddy bear.
Yeah, but it seems so strange to me that it's so offensive to Xi that we've got to stamp out Winnie the Pooh from the borders of China, because it's a cultural difference. But, you know, when you have people who compare somebody like Mitch McConnell to a turtle, everyone's always making turtle jokes at his expense. Jeff Sessions as a Keebler elf.
Oh, yeah.
People compare Paul Ryan to Eddie Munster because that similar brow. You know, there's just like this proud tradition of, you know, I don't know if it's proud, but of, you know, taking politicians and mocking them by comparing them to stuff like funny characters
<things. laughs>
who look like them a bit. But it just, you know, it's one of these things that makes China, which is such a powerful country in the world, now seem small and silly. You know, things like banning Ghostbusters because we can't have depictions of ghosts, and another Disney movie they banned this year, A Wrinkle in Time, because can't have depictions of time travel.
I wondered why The Wrinkle in Time couldn't play. I don't. It's
they have a thing about time travel. Why?
I don't know. Maybe because someone in charge really believes that time travel is a thing, and that suddenly their power will disappear if someone from the future time travels. I mean,
maybe China knows something we don't.
Right? Like, we all have our own sort of weird little things.
Yeah.
And then you get into power, and power is a weird thing.
Right.
Especially in some of these places where they have
precedence for life.
Yeah, like regime style power structures.
Right. It just makes me wonder, who it might give ideas to. Because,
well, and so that's the thing I was thinking, because obviously we can see the States, the leader there, and I unfortunately foresee the leader of the province here.
Yeah.
similarly, but yet I feel like there is something between Western culture versus Eastern culture, because here I feel like either of the two leaders here in the West who are being made fun of, they see that as part of their success.
That's true. That it's the elites and the the court and the media who hate them, and that could be it.
Yeah, like I don't know, because we're only, you know, a year and a bit into Trump, so who knows how that will go, especially if he does some sort of weird constitutional change and makes term limits go away.
Right. It's part of it, though, I wonder, because Trump is a character himself. Like, he, when he was on The Apprentice, he was playing a character, and that character was a competent business person.
And he had many of us fooled. I thought he was... I remember watching The Apprentice thinking, oh, seems like a competent business person. Boy, was I wrong.
Right. You know, it's just, and then, you know, so, you know, maybe there's a bit of adaptation to that, too. And I think Doug Ford plays a character to a certain extent, and his character is like, I'm a, you know, a big brash guy from the suburbs, you know, and I hate the elites and I hate the downtowners, and they're always trying to tell me what to do, and I don't think so. But it could be it. It could be the culture clash. I just thought it was a funny thing that China is stamping out Winnie the Pooh. Also, although he's been sort of reclamated by Disney, originally a Canadian symbol.
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
As we learned from a part of our heritage. Speaking of characters, Sacha Baron Cohen, you may have heard of his new show, Who is America? And some of the trouble is getting American politicians into, primarily Republican politicians last, or the week before that. What's his name from Alabama? Roy Moore.
Right.
He had Roy Moore on, and he was playing his an Israeli character named Aaron Morad. Which sounds almost, you know, pointedly like this is a fake name.
Oh, yeah, but
But he has Roy Moore on, and they were trying out a pedophile detector, and Roy Moore did not appreciate that one bit. But I think one of the persistent questions about this is he helping or hurting?
Well, you know, this sort of comes back to James Gunn a little bit, and... Right? That the so-called comedic tweets that he was sharing 8 years ago, which many people think are not funny. And I, frankly, I haven't actually read them. I haven't looked into it, but I understand that, you know, people talk, like, comedy is one of those things that we can use to poke at things that we feel are wrong in society. The reason some people can tell a rape joke and it's funny, it's because they're making fun of the rapist. The reason other people can tell a rape joke and it's not funny is because they're making fun of the person being raped. That's where the difference is, right? Where's the power? So I understand in a way that what Sacha Baron Cohen is doing is kind of making fun of the people seemingly in power right now. And also mocking them for the rest of us, right? So those people who are sort of on the edge, who are like, oh, I think that this person is saying something that I agree with, and then someone else makes fun of them, and you go, oh, they are kind of stupid. I understand that these are all, you know, bits and pieces of how these social codes change over time, but I just feel like it's mean. I mean, I don't know, because I haven't actually seen any of Sacha Baron Cohen's show. Because I don't want to. It just seems really mean. I'm like, I feel like, I don't know. I know that intellectual, like, facts don't work to change people's minds, and you really do have to work on emotion, and comedy is an emotion, and I get it, but at the same time, it's just like, because the thing is that the people who he's making fun of, or the people who are a part of it, have zero idea that they're part of a comedy show, like an improvisational. It's, I mean, this is my problem too with the, like, just for laughs gags, all those things. I really, really dislike it. I think it is very rude to make comedy at someone else's expense, basically, is exactly what it is.
I don't know how you take any situation in Montreal seriously.
It's I know. It's just like a it's trap. Just like,
how do I know this isn't a Just for Laughs gag? Like, no, I'm stuck in a sewer. I need help. Sure, sure. Just for Laughs, Stooge. Probably why I haven't been to Montreal in a while. I don't want to get caught up in one of those gags. Mm-hmm. I wonder, too, how much of this is preaching to the choir.
Well, yeah.
Because... He's tried to do balance. Like, he had Bernie Sanders on, and Bernie Sanders seemed to not be intentionally in on the gag, but he knew something was up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and there are a couple other people who sort of have, you know, been in on understanding that something about this wasn't quite right.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be that it's a lot of the GOP people who seem to go whole hog when he says, like, we're going to start this thing called Kinder Guardians where we're going to arm 5-year-olds. And they're like, yes, perfect. And, you know, mm-hmm. To me, how much of that is, how much did, were those people, like, sort of juiced up before that they were able to be led from A to B to kids with guns? And then there was the incident with the Jason Spencer guy who was actually had to resign
mm-hmm.
because he was caught in a gag where he was, I don't know, where
he was mooning someone or something. I don't know.
And being like shouting the N-word. It was like some sort of like terrorist intervention sort of scenario. Again, with this Aaron Murad character. It just seems to me that, first of all, like people like Roy Moore and, you know, Matt Gaetz and, you know, these people are easy targets.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just, like, you don't have to see Sacha Baron Cohen make an ass out of them to know that they're stupid or that they're ill-informed or that, you know, they're in politics for a lot of the worst reasons possible. Mm-hmm. Just watch them on CNN. Or
yeah, and
the
I don't
press.
Think that is going to turn very many people who are supporting them. It just drives them in more.
Right. What I did find interesting, somebody pointed out that the Aaron Murad character, because he bills himself as the terrorist terminator, he says mm-hmm. he's former Mossad. And one of the things I did find interesting was, like, the GOP is so entrenched in terms of showing their fealty to Israeli
mm-hmm.
Politics and to people in the Israeli government that, of course, like, if someone who says they are ex-Mossad wants to come and talk to you for their mm-hmm. quote-unquote show, of course you're going to do it because Mossad is great and Israel is great and nothing wrong there. And that part I find interesting, that, you know, Sacha Baron Cohen may have tacked himself onto something there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I wonder how many Canadian politicians would have the exact same, like, oh, of course we'll meet with you.
It's true. There's, I mean, yeah, it's, unfortunately, we're not a target yet.
Yeah. Give it time.
Everyone, you know, Rick Mercer's done, and everyone knows the four people in 22 minutes, so.
Yeah.
With the exception of Just for Laugh gags, you know, making a fantasy land out of Montreal, we're pretty good with what's real up here. Mm-hmm. at least most of us are. So that brings us to the annual discussion of the lineup for the Toronto International Film Festival. They started announcing films last week. They've announced the sort of several of the big galas and special presentations, as well as the Canadian film lineup. It seems like, you know, they've got 13 films directed by women who mm-hmm. were part of the galas presentation. And of course, they also have, like, the usual suspects, like they're bringing A Star Is Born.
I'm very, very excited about that movie.
I don't mind seeing it. I think I'm like, Bradley Cooper's an interesting guy, and I'd be interested to see what he does as a director.
Love Lady Gaga as well, and I'm a huge fan of the original remake. The 70s, Kris Kristofferson and Barbara Streisand.
Right, which this seems heavily influenced by.
Mm-hmm.
Also, First Man, which is Damien Chazelle's next film about Neil Armstrong. And mm-hmm. that trailer is in regular rotation in the theaters and available online. If you check it out, it's...
Yeah, and so that's, like, maybe I've, in all over the years, I've sort of lost the idea of what TIFF is, but I always thought of film festivals as a place where people are trying to get distribution for their films.
Well, that's what
they used to be, and I do know that that has been changing over and over. But like to see First Man on there was really surprising. So I was like, "How? What?
Wait, it's coming out? Yeah,
it's like I could see it anywhere." Also, can we talk about the fact that a Canadian is playing one of America's biggest heroes?
Yeah. That's, I mean, it's Ryan Gosling, though.
Yeah.
But, that is interesting. Of course, you know, when you're, also true of the fictional heroes, too, because, for 8 years, Batman was Welsh. Superman is currently British. Spider-Man is British. Thor is Australian. it's an international workload. Speaking of Canadians, though, a pretty big lineup for the Canadian films that have been introduced so far, like the new Xavier Dolan, which is his first English language film.
Yeah, that should be exciting.
And a lot of big stars in that, like Susan Sarandon, Natalie Portman, Thandi Newton, and Kit Harington, King of the North, Kit Harington.
If you're into that sort of show.
Yeah. Also, Denis Arcand's new film, Jennifer Beichwald, has her third collaboration with Edward Botensky, the photographer. It's about the environment. And then, sadly, Rob Stewart's last film, Sharkwater Extinction. I had the chance to interview him once about the original Sharkwater. Mm-hmm. And that was a powerful movie. That I think the original Sharkwater, because it tells you a lot about why sharks are so important to the ecosystem, and it does it in a more concerning way and less sort of like wicked awesome, like because I was
it's
watching
not Shark Week.
No, that's what I was thinking of, because I was watching some stuff on Shark Week last week, and everything's like sharks are balling, man, and it's like I appreciate the enthusiasm about sharks. And we're reviewing The Meg last week, and that's super exciting. Or next week, and I'm super excited about that.
I'm so sad. a movie made for me. But
I think,
a little respect for sharks.
We need respect for sharks. Yeah. Because even there was a story in the news a couple of weeks ago that about a couple of kids who were bitten by a shark. I think it was off Long Island in sort of the resort areas or the pricey, New York vacationer areas of Long Island where all the big homes are along the coast. And, you watch Discovery Channel and everything is sharks are awesome. But it takes one news story for people to go, oh, yeah, sharks have teeth and they can bite you and maybe kill you. And that leads nowhere good.
No.
I also wanted to point out there's a lot of First Nations representation. There's a film called The Grizzlies.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one called I can't read my writing. I think it's Edge of Comfrey, which is in Haida, which is an Inuit language that is...
So the actual film is in Haida?
Yeah.
That's cool.
So it's... if you don't know, UNESCO keeps a list of languages in the world that are in risk of extinction, and Haida is one of them, and it's an Inuit language. So... one of the things I will say about this is, as you were talking about it, the TIFF has, in a lot of the years, become like a preview of coming attractions of things that were coming into the theater in the fall. And just from this initial list, I'm sure some of that is going to be coming up in the back end once they get stuff signed on the dotted line. But I think what I take from this is it's a really solid representation of Canadian stuff. The best Canadian stuff, but also interesting stuff internationally as well. And even the American films, if it's, A Star is Born, First Man, Jason Reitman's new film about Gary Hart, which stars Hugh Jackman. I would be interested in seeing that.
Have we had a single TIFF go by that hasn't had a Jason Reitman film in it?
That's
not
a great
that there's
question.
Anything wrong with that. He's a great filmmaker.
No, that's a great question, but I think, Juno.
Or at least every second one, at least.
No, I think it's probably been everyone, Juno.
That one with Charlize Theron.
Yeah, which one? He did two with Charlize Theron.
That's right.
Young Adult and Tully.
Yeah,
which
Young
I think
Adult
both
was the one
were.
I thought, yeah.
And the one with George Clooney, Up in the Air.
Up in the Air.
Was definitely part of TIFF.
And did he do the one with Stephen Dorff and the young girl somewhere? Who knows? This is what happens when I bring something up and have zero. But just
we'll have to IMDb that during the break.
TIFF has definitely they came out with a plan to include more women directors in general.
Yes,
and I think that what sort of happens with that is that once you start looking for that a little bit more, you suddenly see all the other places that you're not representing things as well. Also, so I think that's part of it too. Is that they went out specifically to seek something and kind of went, oh, look, there's a whole world of things out here that we could fill our slate with.
You might be right. And we'll have to wait and see what the rest of the festival looks like. But we're going to take a break right now. We're going to play a musical break with Joe Past and the Millennial Trash Blues, which I think will provide a lovely segue to our review of the week. The Spy Who Dumped Me, you are listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
Suspicious if we go through international security with no luggage and just a weird trophy, right?
Wait. Wouldn't it be more suspicious if we go through security with a suitcase that's totally empty except for the weird trophy?
Yes. We need more trophies then. That's what we'll do. We'll be the kind of women who jet off to Vienna with all of our awards. We're notable. We're recognized. We have trophies, baby.
Best grandson?
Yes.
Don't be nervous. People get caught when they're not confident.
Hello, are you new?
I usually do with Cesar. We gotta get rid of our phones. Bad guys can track us even if they're off.
Right. I've actually known that for a long time. I went to performing arts camp with Edward Snowden.
Oh, that's right. You used to date Snowden.
No. He tried. God, he was obsessed with me. He was really into ska. When the whole thing was going down, I was like, why is no one talking about the fact that Edward Snowden is really into ska?
Give me your phone.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a clip from The Spy Who Dumped Me. It is the new film from Susanna Fogel, and it stars Mila Kunis, Kate McKinnon, Sam Heughan, Hasan Minhaj, Justin Theroux, and Julian Anderson. This was fun.
Yes.
This was a lot of fun.
Yes, it was fun. As we were listening to that clip, I forgot about the... Why is nobody talking about how into ska Snowden is?
Yeah. Like, and I did enjoy how that actually... was a bit of foreshadowing.
Yeah.
There was a bit of payoff for that in the end. And I also, I did like that bit, but I also like when they're going through security and she's like, I usually deal with Cesar. It's like, are you new here? I think she's the all-star in this Kate McKinnon. She's just, it's like there's so much energy there.
Mm-hmm.
The movie doesn't know how to cope, so they just let her off the leash.
She's a little much.
Yes,
which is really, really true. I mean, it's said in the film, but like right from the so I did not see Ghostbusters
because
I just didn't really have interest. I was like, whatever. I enjoyed Ghostbusters. It was a thing. I liked it. I wasn't ever looking for more Ghostbusters or Ghostbusters with women. So it never really made it to my I've got to see that. And then.
It didn't make it to your My List because it is on Netflix.
Yeah. I think I did just recently put it on because I was like, maybe I should watch this. But I understand that Kate McKinnon was very much sort of the outstanding performance of Ghostbusters.
Yes.
So I was like, okay, the Ghostbusters woman is going to be in this. I guess we'll find out. I'm just here for Mila Kunis. Let's be realistic. But from immediately, immediate. As soon as she walks onto screen, I was like, oh, yeah, okay. I get it.
She's just such a gamer. It's, maybe I get her.
Yeah.
And
it's fine. I totally get it. It's a thing. It's weird because I would say it's not my style of comedy, but yet I love Will Ferrell, who I think is basically the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very similar style. I don't know why.
I'm going to be as loud and outrageous as possible.
Yeah.
And maybe you can deal with that, but that's the way it is.
I do think that she was great. Like, I did definitely like her in some of the, I'll say quieter moments. They're not really quieter moments, but some of the less comedy, more acting moments. I think she was really great.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I mean, this movie was co-written and directed by a woman, so there's a bit more female sensibility
it
to it.
It definitely felt like it was, too.
That's, because there's never a moment where, you know, there's friction or, you know, that they don't have each other's back, you know, which I think is something that's sort of relied on in these buddy these female buddy movies where they have to have some kind of conflict and there's never like that. They've always have each other's back. And the other thing I like about this is that of course they're not spies themselves.
Yeah.
But they are not they are not without their wits. They are not without
they have skills which come in handy and are able to apply them to a situation.
Yeah, they can cope.
Yes, they can.
So it's just not a matter of them being dumb girls now in the spy world.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they are inexperienced and they have no idea what they're doing, but they are also smart and capable. And you see that very early on when they're supposed to make the trade for this trophy, which has the doodad in it, the MacGuffin.
Yeah.
And she has it in her bag the whole time, not in the suitcase. And, you know, just little things like that that make you think, you know what? Granted, they are not spies, but they've at least seen some spy movies.
Yeah. Well, and so part of it, too, right, is the whole, like, don't trust anyone.
Right.
And asking a woman not to trust anyone, it's not a far stretch.
Right.
Right? Like,
yeah.
Women go through life fairly guarded to begin with. So some of those things, you know, are maybe, like, just a natural extrapolation from, you know, the other things.
Yeah, I know, not to get serious, but I remember reading a tweet when the Weinstein stuff came out, and this woman said, like, yeah, I don't go on a date with someone new unless I tell, send a text message to my friends, like, where am I going, who am I going with, what the person's name is, what they're wearing, and I'm like, geez, really? That's what, you know, when a woman goes on a date, first date, and with somebody she doesn't hardly know.
It's... And try to actually build a relationship out of that immediate distrust. Right?
Yeah.
Like, how do you... Yeah. So, moving on from that, back to fun buddy comedy.
But I like when Gillian Anderson comes into the picture.
Yes.
And,
I feel like Kate McKinnon had the line that basically describes my life and certainly my role here, but the yes.
Which one, like, when she comes in, like, we should have been dealing with you the whole time.
No. My respect for you has circled all the way back to objectification.
That's...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that is how I feel about a lot of people. I can objectify you because I have so much respect. I've just come all the way back around.
Yeah, no, I like that bit. Because, the guy spies are kind of outrageous. I mean, I wonder if Sam Heughan, who people may know from... The Outlander show.
Mm, he looked a little familiar, but I couldn't quite place him.
Because he wasn't wearing a kilt and had long hair.
Yeah, the hair.
And talking with that Scottish brogue. and he was also wearing a shirt for almost the whole time, which I know is not a...
Yeah, pretty much. There was a little shirtlessness just to, you know.
Right, but I thought he was David Beckham for a minute. But anyway.
I can see that, yeah.
But, you know, he's... He's a good actor and obviously a handsome man, but I wonder, or I was thinking, like, maybe he was a bit outgunned because his partner is Hasan Minhaj, who's a comedian. People probably know him best from The Daily Show.
Mm-hmm.
There's all this ongoing joke how he's always talking about how he went to Harvard.
Yeah.
And I think that's also plays into one of my bigger, or the biggest critique I have, which is the film is... There's a lot of graphic violence in this. It's a radar movie.
I like it.
I understand. it's like the violence is almost too real that it kind of overshadows the zaniness. Mm-hmm. And then on the other hand, you have the zaniness, which is almost too zany to cope with the... Like, especially how one person dies near the end.
Oh,
off the trapeze.
Yes. Yeah, that was pretty great. I really appreciated that.
But it's just it didn't have quite the right balance to it, I felt. And I think he was one of the main issues.
I do feel like you're definitely right in that I think he was sort of supposed to be the straight man in their sort of buddy, you know, version, except that he just came off really like a cardboard cutout there. I do think that once we took him out of that situation and put him with the women.
Right, where they're sort of leading the show.
Yeah, it became, he developed more character there.
Yeah.
And was just better able to play off them.
Yeah, because he's taken the back seat there. I wonder how it would have looked like if you had gotten somebody like Chris Hemsworth, who has that physicality and is good looking, but also has really good sense of comedy.
I feel like it would have been too much zany.
Maybe.
I mean, maybe that's also part of the reason why I haven't watched Ghostbusters yet. I don't know. It's like someone's got to. So what's interesting to me is that, I enjoyed this movie quite a bit. I had a really good time. I came out and I was like, that was really fun. Mm-hmm. And so the cover of the Tribute magazine, because I went to go see a second movie last night with a friend, and the cover of the Tribute magazine is the two of them, Kate McKinnon and Mila Kunis, and it says, outrageously funny is the thing. And my friend said, so was it outrageously funny? And I was like, I guess. I don't remember actually really laughing all that much. Like, it was fun and I enjoyed it.
I was laughing.
Yeah, and I don't know. And so even like looking at the IMDb, you know, there's one person who is like, don't go for the story, go for the jokes, because the stories. I agree, the story it doesn't really stray very far from a pretty typical sort of spy action thing.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Whereas a few down, it's like, well, this was more fun than funny. Like, this is really like across, like all, like, I don't know. I really enjoyed it, but I didn't find it outrageously funny. I didn't find myself laughing.
I didn't find it outrageously funny. I just thought it was fun and funny.
Except for the Gillie Anderson. That was very.
She was, I mean, the way she played it, like, very, very straight.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was, like, doing very much the Judi Dench in James Bond thing.
I very much appreciated the video chat when they're like, is she frozen? Did you freeze?
Yeah, that was funny.
Yep, nope. She's just still giving you the exact same
look.
She's
giving you the evil eye because you're a couple of losers.
I appreciated that. I did laugh. I do find Jane Curtin and Paul Reiser actually did make me laugh.
Yeah, they were fun. Just enough Paul Reiser. But yeah, no, they, I thought everyone was, you know, at least, you know, carried the weight. The actress who plays the assassin slash gymnast.
Yeah.
She was very good. Like, just her intensity.
Oh, yeah. Really, really enjoyed her. I was a little bit uncomfortable at one point when, just before the sort of torture scene.
Yeah.
When she was kind of, I mean, we'd already seen her a few times, but she was revealed as an ex-gymnast, like Olympic gymnast. And Kate McKinnon, I don't know if this was like an improv thing, but she was just like, what is it? And I'm like, are we making a gender joke here? Because I don't know if I'm okay with that.
Right.
Like, that was the only place that I was just like, that was some questionable comedy that maybe it's not okay in this day and age.
Maybe.
I mean, it's a common joke that has happened numerous times about Russian athletes who are on the women's team. People are like, are we sure that's a woman? I'm like, can we move past this? Like,
right. No, it's I didn't read it that way. I just I you know, and you could be right.
Yeah, and I don't know.
I read it as just like, what's going on?
What is going on? Who are these people? Where is this? Why is this gymnast coming? I don't understand. Yeah, it's true. It could be that, but.
But that was kind of like the kind of straightness that I liked, because it's so straight versus the complete madcap, like when they're being tortured and like, oh, we'll tell you, like, we have no idea what's going on. We'll tell you everything. We know everything about each other. And they start rattling off random things.
Yes, like, all the worst things about the other person.
That's right. That was pretty enjoyable. I wanted to ask you about Justin Theroux as a woman.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts of Justin Theroux? Because I find him kind of oily.
Yeah. So the first time I really heard his name or knew anything about him was in Zoolander 2, because I was with...
That's a random reference.
I know. I was with some people, and there was a bisexual man that I was with in the group, and he was just like, who was the hottest in this movie? I think it was Justin Theroux. And I was like, which one was he? Who is... Like, I recognize the name. I know that this is the person who either is or still or was married to Jennifer Aniston.
Yes.
Are they still married? I don't know.
They could be separated.
I know the name, but I couldn't tell you who this person is if you, like...
I had to cancel my People Magazine subscription, okay?
Oh, I'm sorry. So, yeah. So I was just like, okay. And he's like, not in this movie, but look. And he's showing me pictures. I was like, I guess he's okay. I don't know. Mm. I was very proud of myself that the second he appeared on screen, I was like, that's Justin Theroux. I know this. I finally know this actor that people are crazy about.
Nailed it.
Yeah. I don't know that I find him oily, but he's definitely, he's not for me.
Yeah.
But some people are really into that, I guess.
I guess.
He is not a pretty boy.
No.
But I also find, I find some very sort of gruff or manly featured men to be quite attractive. And I don't find that he's particularly manly featured either.
Mm.
Like, there's something, it's like there's somewhere in between.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's oily. Maybe that's how you...
No, I just remembered from seeing the girl on the train and, sort of like within a couple of minutes, I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, he killed her. It had nothing to do with the plot or having read the book or anything. It was just like, oh, he did it. But maybe that's...
He was the bad guy in Zoolander 2 also.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. I'm going to have to look through his... Who knows?
Yeah.
What else has he been? I don't even know.
We'll consult IMDb after the show. Because there was this... There are flashbacks to them, have Tim and Mila Kunis having like their first meeting. And,
yeah.
And, there was him singing Crash Test... First of all, Crash Test Dummies, worst song in the jukebox.
I do not think so. Absolutely. Yes.
And that's not just a Canadian thing.
Nope. It's untrue that is the worst song in the jukebox. There are definitely worse songs on that jukebox.
Yes. Like Mambo Number 5.
Definitely worse.
Gets sort of a pass because you can sync it up to the gunfight in the first Matrix.
Oh,
and it
okay.
works really good.
All
it's
right.
on YouTube.
I'll do that when I get home.
Yeah. But it's amazing. Yeah. He's singing along to the Crash Test Dummies. I'm like, this guy does not sing along to the Crash Test Dummies.
No. Who even knows that song in the States? Was it popular? I mean, I thought Peter Pumpkinhead was the only song that broke in the States.
It was on the Dumb and Dumber soundtrack. Yes. Thank you.
Nobody else in the States knows anything about Crash Test Dummies.
Well, except for the actual dummies that you put in the car to test them.
Yes, I meant the they band, don't mean the band clearly.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I'm just saying. You're a Mila Kunis fan.
I am.
Expand on that.
So, I think I was not a huge fan of Jackie in that 70s show.
Who was?
Well, and that's exactly it. Now I'm just like, oh, I get it, because she actually really did a very good job of being really kind of like not.
She was the buzzkill. Cool.
I know, which is so funny because she's so not like that in so many other films.
Yeah.
So in some ways, and I feel like this particular film, and especially, she does often play what we think Mila Kunis is in real life.
Mm.
I feel like, we could watch this and go, that's probably what she's like in real life, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to her character in Forgetting Sarah Marshall. It seems like this is probably, probably kind of her.
The cool chick.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Good. That's exactly it. Yes. I don't think that that's a problem. I think that it's okay. And certainly I've seen her do other things. Like her character in... the one with Denzel Washington, the post-apocalyptic.
Oh, Book of Eli.
Yeah. That was very, not like her other characters at all. So I do think that she actually does have quite a nice, range.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But she just has so much charisma. Like, she just lights up the screen. She's, very, very pretty, obviously. She is a good actress. She just, and you just, you're drawn to her.
Yeah.
And in real life, she seems pretty awesome. You know, she is, she calls people out on their BS, even in press conferences.
No, it just, yeah, it's funny about her. It feels like when you kind of see her in action, she should be a bigger star.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm
but
not
I think
sure.
that she chooses not to be, because she is
might,
also
yeah.
a parent, right?
Yeah.
I think they have two kids now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I feel like there's maybe a bit of a boundary there where she wants to. Because I know that they don't, even their relationship with Ashton Kutcher, like they don't really, it's not really part of the news cycle.
Well, yeah. Well, I imagine a lot of that has to do with Ashton Kutcher's last marriage and being part of the news cycle
yeah.
there. But it's, you know, she's an interesting actress, and because, yeah, there is that sort of implicit, you know, feeling that you want to root for her.
Mm-hmm.
I admittedly, I kind of like Jupiter Ascending.
Oh, and I haven't seen that.
and I think she's one of the reasons why, if you think that movie works, I think she's one of the reasons why it works, because you can believe the early phases where she's, you know, berating the life of being a house cleaner, and then she finds out she's basically owns the universe, and you believe that transformation and where she ends up in the end, where she is kind of comfortable in both worlds. And yeah, it strikes, like, I think they were a good match. And Kate McKinnon, where Kunis can be laid back and McKinnon can do the McKinnon thing.
Be out there.
And be much. And I was reading some comment. It was like, oh, they seem like so mismatched. They have no chemistry. It's like, I didn't see that. I thought they were very, very good together.
Yeah, and I definitely also think that as a woman who sort of goes through life maybe a little, not so much introverted, but a little like without personality in a way, right? She doesn't know what she wants to be. She doesn't know what she's good at. She just kind of floats through life.
Right.
You're just drawn to people who are like, who are so much bigger than you.
Right.
It's like, this person actually helps me.
Right.
Get out there once in a while, or do something more, or I strive to be that person.
Right, because it's the McKinnon character who's like, you know, we should go and take the trophy to Vienna, and, you know, do you want to die having never seen Europe,
or do you want to die
go to Europe and die? Yeah,
having seen Europe. Yeah,
it's I like the pairing, and yeah, it was just a lot of fun, and I feel like we rarely go to a movie that's just fun. I don't mean necessarily us on this show, but I mean the audience in general.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of people at the theater on Friday night when I saw it. And I don't think anyone left having had a bad time. It seems harder and harder to, you know, unless it's something big, unless it's one of these tent poles, that, you know, to actually make the effort to go out and see something like this. And so, yeah, you know, if we can wrap things up by, you know, encouraging people to, like, go and check this out and enjoy it. And, you know, it's not going to change the world. It's not high art. But
no,
I think it's a great female buddy comedy that, you know, does have its issues. But I think it's still entertaining.
Yeah. It certainly has, you know, its share of action. It's really action-packed. So
that's something I found, like, the beginning of the film where it's like Justin Theroux, like, going through, like, this Eastern Europe market. It was like, this would not be out of place in something like the Bourne movies or
Well, and the same day I saw Equalizer 2, and there were times that I was like, you know, the action levels are right on par with each other.
Right.
In fact, I think that there might have been a higher death count in The Spy Who Dumped Me, in actual fact.
You might be right about that.
And like a brutal, like, you know, and not a ridiculously, like, silly death count.
Right.
But, like, real, you know, brutal.
It's like John
violence.
Wick level violence.
Yes, John Wick. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, we'll have to when they both come out on video, I'm gonna get them and then do a death count, and we'll see how it shakes out. And I'll be interested to see, because it's funny now that we're thinking about it. I'm afraid we'll have to think about it out of the booth, because that is the end of our show. And if you'd like to listen to End Credits again, you can find it on our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. You can find us on social media, End Credits Radio Show on Facebook and End Credits Radio on Twitter. And Candace, if people should choose to find you on the internet, where can they find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me anywhere at Sinn48. It's CINN48. There should be a new episode of the Village Podcast by the Bookshelf if you want some more of my opinions on things.
And who doesn't want more opinions from Candace? We'll have to wait for controversy to boil up again before we get Candace back. In the meantime, you can listen to me again tomorrow at 5 p.m. on Thursday on CFRU. That's for news and politics over on Open Sources Guelph with Scotty Hertz there. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca. Do stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we will be back here next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for more End Credits. And we will see you then.